The Lord be with you. At the end of a dark hallway, inside of a dark house, stood a dark figure with a beard like a thorn bush and eyebrows like hedgehogs and a stare that could turn Medusa to stone. And I've got a picture of it here. So this portrait is a portrait of my ancestor, whose name was E.A. Clark, and this portrait loomed large, literally 5 feet tall, in the childhood of my grandfather and my uncle. They grew up terrified of this image, and rightly so, if you can imagine it staring taller than you are. But while my parents, my dad and my uncle, were terrified of the portrait of E.A. Clark, my grandparents and their generation spoke glowingly about E.A. Clark. For them, this man was the ultimate paragon of a patriarch. He represented what our family stood for. And particularly, my great aunt loved to tell stories about all that he had done. And she would say how when the gold rush hit here in California, he joined the other 49ers in the mid-1800s. In coming out west and making a life for himself. He was a doctor. He was a lawyer. He was the first superintendent of schools for San Jose. He was a postmaster. She would say how he wrote thousands of editorials for the local newspapers, strongly advocating for the positions that he felt were important for this country, and that above all, he never took a single drop of poison into himself. Which is to say, he was a prohibitionist and a teetotaler. Now, many families have some figure like this that looms large in their household. And in our scriptures today, the figure that looms large is Moses. Last week, we heard how Moses died and ended his ministry. And at Moses' death, the scriptures tell us that there will never again be a prophet like Moses in Israel. Now, this Sunday, we hear the person who has to follow up Moses, who inherits his job, Joshua. And it's a big act for him to follow. But even 1,300 years later, in Jesus' time, people are still trying to figure out how to live up to Moses' legacy. Jesus is talking about his religious rivals, the Pharisees. And he pays them a compliment by saying the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, which is to say, they continue to teach the laws that Moses first set out so many generations ago. And yet, there are many ways in which we pass down an ancestor's legacy and many ways in which we try to live up to it, some of which are helpful and some of which can be incredibly harmful. In my family, the Colahan family, the emphasis of E.A. Clark's legacy was passed down with the idea of education, that education was the key to success. And this was particularly important for my grandfather, who came of age during the Great Depression. His family lived in relative poverty, and it was getting an engineering degree at UC Berkeley that allowed him to make a successful life for himself. And so he would speak lovingly of not only the learning that he did there, but the recreation he got to do hiking in the Berkeley foothills. And my grandfather married my grandmother, who herself was a teacher. In fact, they met because my grandfather's sister was also a teacher who worked with my grandmother and introduced them. And so education became a foundational value for the Colahan family. My dad and my uncle remember as kids at the dinner table, their parents would discuss what colleges they might apply to when they got older. There was always an emphasis on how good their grades were, and even when the family would go relax and hike in the deserts and mountains of California, they would always discuss the geology of the rocks that they had passed or discuss the books that they had recently read while they hiked. Now, this emphasis on education, it worked out really well for my father, whose name is Clark, after E.A. Clark. My dad would go on to become the valedictorian of his high school and eventually get a PhD in Spanish literature. But my uncle had a very different reaction to the ways in which E.A. Clark's legacy was pushed on him. And as I discussed with my uncle this past week why he had a different response than my father, He said it might have been one of two things. First, he said he maybe just had a more rebellious nature. My uncle remembers when he was 7 years old, he found a quarter on the bathroom floor of a gym. And he took that quarter and he immediately went and put it in a cigarette vending machine and bought a pack of Lucky Strikes because they were just the coolest cigarette cartons. And he knew his parents would never in their life smoke. When his dad caught him smoking, he said that was the first and only time that he was ever beaten by his father. And his father said to him, "When you're 18, you can smoke all you want, but not while you're under my roof." And the lesson my uncle took from that is, when I'm 18, I can be free. I don't have to listen to my dad anymore. But my uncle also wonders if perhaps the way he learns is just different. Because he said he really did try hard at school, and in high school, he got middling grades. And under pressure from his father, my uncle went off to engineering school to be like his dad in college. And he said he worked really hard in college, but eventually he flunked out. Or more precisely, eventually he got so many D's that his dad said, "If you get another D, we aren't funding your education anymore." And sure enough, he got another one. Now, when Jesus talks about the legacy that the Pharisees have, the ways they sit on Moses' seat, he is paying them a compliment in that they truly know really well what Moses taught. And he says that his disciples should learn from them when they teach what Moses taught. But he says his disciples shouldn't do as they do. Because what they do is tie up heavy burdens and lay them on people's shoulders that are too heavy to bear. And then they don't even lift a finger to help those people. And what Jesus means by this is that the Pharisees had taken Moses' laws and turned them into a burden. Most famously, the Pharisees were very strict about the Sabbath, about taking a day of rest, and it is a good thing to take a day of rest, but the Pharisees would police people to make sure the ways that they were resting didn't violate their understanding of what it meant to rest. Famously, when Jesus tried to heal people on the Sabbath, the Pharisees would criticize him for not respecting Moses' teachings. But Jesus says in Matthew 11 that Jesus' yoke is easy and that Jesus' burden is light, not because he's rejected Moses' teachings, but because he understands the purpose of Moses' teachings. You see, Moses, he dedicated his life to setting his people free from slavery. From slavery in Egypt, but then also as they wandered in the wilderness, he had to teach them what it meant to live as people who were free in a society together. And that's why Moses gave the Israelites the commandments from God, so that they could live free with one another. Jesus understands this, and so he sets people free from their illness on the Sabbath. But the Pharisees are so obsessed with their understanding of the letter of the law that they miss out on the spirit of Moses' gift of freedom. And what was meant to liberate oppresses. And I think that's what happened with my uncle. See, my grandparents, they wanted the best for him, and so they were trying to pass down the best that they knew. But it wasn't what was best for him. My uncle says that when he dropped out of school, he felt incredible shame at not living up to his parents' expectations of graduating from college. Although, as he reflects now, he says he didn't realize it at the time. Instead, at the time, what he'd say to himself is, I'll just take another beer. I'll just smoke another cigarette. Because those were his ways of trying to pretend that he didn't care what his parents thought about him. And so he would throw himself into making a life for himself in his own way, instead of the way his parents taught him. He would go and find any job that he could. At first, it was selling welding materials. Sometimes it was being a camp counselor or scooping ice cream. But he would take those jobs and he would try to learn from them and get better not only at them, but at skills that he could apply for other jobs. And he would apply for jobs to which he didn't have any qualifications. His philosophy was fake it till you make it. Learn as you go. And he did. And what he learned was, one of the things he loved and brought him joy was theater. And so for 5 years, while he would sell welding equipment, he would do theater in the evenings in local community theaters. Until eventually someone said, "You know what? you've got a real passion and a real drive. And out of the blue, they offered him a scholarship to go back and finish his college education, not in engineering, but in theater. And my uncle says he took that opportunity and he finished his degree in large part because he didn't want to feel that shame anymore about his parents' expectations. But it wasn't that degree that helped make his career. It was his willingness to learn on the job, to take risks, to expand himself. He started off building sets as a carpenter for theaters, and then he went off to scenic design, and then he took that and he worked his way up to an assistant stage manager, and then to a stage manager, and then he became a production manager at the peak of his theater career for Radio City Music Hall in New York City. And his dad came out to visit him as he was working in this big, successful place. And his dad, you know, grew up in California in the early 20th century. He was used to wide open spaces and he really didn't like Manhattan. And so my uncle said, let's go for an urban hike. And they went and they crossed the Manhattan Bridge, which had been closed to traffic, or at least car traffic, but there was foot traffic, tens of thousands of people. And there on the bridge, my uncle said to his father, look out at this beautiful, beautiful river we're over. See, we can enjoy an urban hike here in New York City. To which my grandfather responded, son, it's hard to see God among all these people. My grandfather had an image of what a Colahan should be, a frontiersman and an academic. And my uncle wasn't fitting in to that mold. But the irony is, E.A. Clarke would never have wanted one of his descendants trapped by his legacy because he lived his life trying to set people free. E.A. Is an abbreviation. My ancestor's full name is Eleutherus Americus Clarke. You can see why we abbreviated to E.A. But Eleutherus Americus is a combination of Greek and Latin, and it literally means free American. His name was Free American, and he lived his life trying to set other Americans free. He was a fervent abolitionist, trying to bring about an end to slavery in this country. He was a founding member of the Republican Party, and his wife personally knew Abraham Lincoln and was one of the people who helped convince him to run for president. E.A. Clarke was also passionate about liberating women, making sure they had the right to vote decades before it would become a law in this country. E.A. Clarke had a legacy worthy of emulation, worthy of passing on, but there are many ways in which we can carry on our ancestors' legacy. God knows this, which is why in the book of Joshua, when Joshua now has to take on the leadership role that Moses had, has to fill shoes that are far too large for him, God says to Joshua, I will exalt you in the sight of all Israel. I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel so that they know that I will be with you just as I was with Moses. The people need to know God's with Joshua just as God is with Moses. And so God has Joshua part waters just as Moses parted the Red Sea 40 years earlier. But God doesn't have Joshua do it the same way that Moses did, by taking a staff and striking the waters. No. God has Joshua do it in his own way. And Joshua commands 12 priests of Israel to carry the Ark of the Covenant, a box about 4 feet long and 2.5 feet tall, solid wood, covered in gold with golden statues on it. It would have been incredibly heavy. And these priests carried the Ark of the Covenant, which was thought to have the presence of God within it. And so these 12 priests carried this heavy Ark into the flooding waters of the River Jordan. And as they stepped into those rushing waters, the waters stop. And it is the presence of God who parts them. And the priests carry that heavy Ark of the Covenant. They hold the presence of God in the midst of that river while thousands of their family members pass by from the wilderness into the land that had been promised to them. Yes, Joshua has the same purpose as Moses, to lead his people to the promised land. And he even does something similar to Moses in parting waters, but he does it in his own way. And as my uncle and I talked this past week, we realized that my uncle lived out E.A. Clarke's legacy in his own way. Because the truth of the matter is, E.A. Clarke dropped out of medical school. After 2 years, he dropped out to go join the gold rush here in California. He would eventually return and finish his degree, but only when California passed a law requiring doctors to actually have a degree to practice. And yes, E.A. Clarke was a lawyer, but he didn't go to law school. He taught himself. And yes, E.A. Clarke was a postmaster, but he only got the job because his wife had political connections. He didn't have any qualifications for the job. He faked it until he made it. He took what he would learn in each job and he would figure out a way to apply it to the next. And he had successes and he had failures. He tried homesteading near San Luis Obispo and it went very poorly. He tried investing in a silver mine and that basically just ate up all his money. But he kept trying. He didn't give up. He took the lessons life would offer and he learned from them and applied them, not to just to himself, but to the generations that could come so that this world might become better, might become a little more free, just as he had been. You see, my father and my uncle, they have both lived out the legacy of E.A. Clarke, but they have done it in different ways. I can't even say that one has focused on formal education and one has been self-taught, because the truth is they both have done both, just with different emphases. And what is shocking to me is that for as much as my uncle and my father think they're different, when we gather together, it's clear how similar we are. I have a photo here of my father and my uncle and me and my cousin 3 years ago. And first of all, we all definitely look alike, so there's that. But I've also been shocked in the ways in which what we have pursued in life resonates. I'm a pastor. My dad's a literature professor. Giles, my uncle, went into theater, and his son, my cousin, went into music. And while these may seem like different professions, at the end of the day, each and every one of them is an attempt to reflect and understand the truths that we have found in life, and then to go before others and make ourselves vulnerable as we share those truths. What also surprises me is that both my uncle and I, at some point, moved to New York City in pursuit of career opportunities, but at some point, both of us realized that we didn't want to be there. We wanted to be someplace where there were fewer people and more trees. We both lived out my grandpa's advice that it's awfully hard to see God when there's too many people. And when I talked to my uncle about the legacy that he wants to pass on to his son, he said he wants to teach his son the love of the outdoors, where he can focus and see God. And that describes to a T how my father and I both find God as well, by going out of doors. But the other thing my uncle said he wanted to pass on was that he wants his son to know that he is loved no matter what he does, that he should have confidence in the work that he pursues, no matter what it is. And when my uncle said this, I thought back to when I was in college and I had recently abandoned my career as a physics major. And I was in a play at that moment. My dad came out to see it. And after the show was over, he greeted me, and there were tears in his eyes. And my dad said to me, "Ben, if you want to pursue theater, I'll support you." And I laughed and said, "No, that's not what God's calling me to do." But I am struck that for all their differences, my father and my uncle learned the same lesson of E.A. Clarke. That what they want to do in life is to set the next generation free. Jesus says that we are not to have people that we call rabbi or people that we call father or instructor. Jesus says this not because we don't need people who teach us in life or parents who raise this, but because in the ancient world, these titles were positions that commanded incredible authority. In the ancient world, there was an idea of a pater familias, the head of the household. This person was called father not because they had sired children, but because they were in charge of an estate, both with biological family members and servants and slaves and people who relied on them for jobs and for legal advice, who relied on them for marriage opportunities. And in the ancient world, teachers just didn't just share the wisdom or the knowledge that they had accrued over their years. Teachers were thought to be paragons of virtue. And students' jobs weren't just to absorb their knowledge, it was to imitate their lives. Jesus says, don't do that. Don't put anyone on a pedestal. Jesus says, you are all students. We are all children trying to figure out our way in this world. And each of us have one heavenly Father who guides us all. And so on this All Saints Day, as we reflect on the saints who have gone before us, both biological and spiritual, the people who have shaped our lives, whether we have wanted them to or not, may we see them not as portraits or photos hanging on a wall staring down at us with expectations that we have to live up to. May we instead see them as those priests that Joshua sent to carry the Ark of the Covenant into the waters of the River Jordan. May we see them as the priests who have carried God's presence into the raging waters of time so that we might know God, and that God's presence in our life might part the waters for us so that we can walk into the future that God has prepared. Our ancestors do this for us still. They continue to hold God's presence for us even beyond the grave. For God holds them for us in eternal life. And so on this day, on this week, and in this life, may we too reflect how we can carry God's presence to part the waters for the generations that are to come, that they too may be free in the land of promise. Amen.